Hello, good morning. It's 11:05. It's Sunday morning. It's Folk Tales. I'm Terry Bennett, and in the studio today, as always, I've got a very interesting guest. And my guest today is Ben Weller, and Ben is the owner, the leading light, the main man behind the Twisted Cider Company. Good morning, Ben. Anyway, you are, as I say, the main man behind the Twisted Cider Company. What is the Twisted Cider Company?
Twisted Cider Company, at this point in time, it is a craft producer of farmhouse cider, and we're also now moving into the sparkling section of cider. So okay. We've moved on a little bit from where we first started.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll just continue on that path.
Right. Now, I have to admit, and I did say to you just before we started this interview, that I know nothing about cider. Drinking is not a big part of my life, so you're going to have to treat me as a novice in all of this.
Oh, indeed I will, Terry, because obviously I've got four lovely bottles of cider in front of me, which you can't even try.
Looking at that, and I'm sure some of my colleagues would be drooling over it.
Less well. I'm sure you can give it some after the interview and it'll go to a good use.
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
A good home.
But okay, so the Twisted Cider Company then, is your own idea? You've built it up, have you?
It is a creation that me and a friend first ventured on back in 2012, let's say. So there was two of us in the beginning, and now there is only me.
Okay.
Because my friend went to follow another career after several years of making it start. And now it's just me. I'm the only one, but I have a lot of support from my family, let's say.
Yeah.
They all play a key role within the organisation and helping us grow. So it's much a family business. And I have a lot of support from friends as well.
Yeah, okay. And you actually make the cider, do you?
I do. Yeah. I make the cider, So down in Long Burton, for those of you who don't know, it's just outside of Sherborne, 3 miles on the way to Dorchester. So every year, come harvest time, which is in October, starts in October.
Yeah.
I look at the apple trees. We've got a tiny orchard just in the farmyard. And I see how ripe and fruity they look. And I think, it's pressing time. So I'll go and take a few off, give a little bite and see if they're ready to be pressed.
Yeah.
And then I know it is time to start making cider, if it tastes good.
Well, this is sounding interesting. So let's take your first track.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about how you finally came to be doing this.
Fantastic.
So your first track is by Queen.
Yes.
Tell me about Fat Bottomed Girls.
Well, we went to a meal the other week and my friend Lee loves this song.
Okay.
And we all got to choose a song in the restaurant. And unfortunately, his song was not chosen by the DJ. So I want to play it for him today. His name's Lee Goddard, just so you don't feel left out, Lee.
Okay, let's play the track. Fat Bottom Girls by Queen.
Oh, you're gonna take me home tonight. Oh, down beside that red firelight. Oh, you're gonna let it all hang out. Fat Bottom Girls, you make the rockin' world go round. Across the lake, I've seen every blue-eyed Susie on the way.
Well, there we go. Queen and Fat Bottom Girls from 1978, written by Brian May and from their album Jazz. Got to number 11 in the UK. In the studio, I've got Ben Weller, who's the owner of the Twisted Cider Company. And Ben, you were just saying you were going to dedicate that to your friend Lee.
That's right. Yep, Lee. So I hope you're satisfied now, because you didn't get the chance to listen to it when we was at the Cow and Apple the other day, which is a beautiful cider and burger bar, which serves twisted cider.
Yeah, well, there's a funny thing. Yeah, they just happen to stock your cider,
they
right?
They do indeed. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, we talked a little bit about the business as it now is, and we'll come back to that. Yep. But before we do that, let's go back in years then. Okay. And you were born around here or elsewhere?
I was
elsewhere?
Born in Sherborne.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, on August the 8th, 1982. Oh, that makes me 34
youngster.
Years old. What do you think, say? I feel old.
Well, everything's relative.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay. So you were born in Sherborne.
I was.
And have you spent most of your life here?
I have, in the surrounding areas. Mm. So I was born in Sherborne, but quite quickly moved to Yeovil, because that's where my dad worked. So okay. They uprooted and moved to Yeovil. And then I grew up in Yeovil, so all of my school years were spent in around the Penmill, Grass Royal and Buckler's Mead area.
I see.
So that part of town.
So tell me about school then.
Yes.
Was that happy days or...
I think school was a happy time. When I can reflect on it now, I had a good set of friends and we enjoyed ourselves. Obviously, I've got a ginger hair. You might have noticed, Terry. Any kid growing up with ginger hair is going to be picked on a little bit at school. So, you know, I did experience some bullying,
okay.
But not to an extent where I was it demotivated me.
Wasn't,
you know,
serious.
It wasn't serious. Yeah. No. So, I focused at school. Mm-hmm. That might be a little bit of a lie, but yeah, nonetheless, I did finish and I did graduate and I got my GCSEs.
Jolly good. Okay. So reasonably happy times. Any thoughts at school about what you wanted to do in life?
Absolutely none.
No.
I think that was the hardest part when I left school, was trying to find a path for me and what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Obviously, Yeovil was quite a big engineering town, in manufacturing town. Mm-hmm. Most of my family went to Westlands, or they went to be engineers to work for companies that supported Westlands, and I just never found an interest in it. So although they were almost forcing me down that route, I wanted to go out and experience something different.
Okay. So what about mum and dad? Were they an influence in terms of where you ended up, and what were their professions?
So my mother used to run a nursery in Rosebery Avenue called Rosie Dell. That went for several years. It was a thriving little nursery. I actually loved it.
Yeah.
And my stepdad is an engineer. He used to run a company called Ramp, building ramps for Westlands to build the helicopters. And my biological father, who's called Pete Weller, he is an engineer as well, works for Honeywell.
Okay, so there's engineering in the background. Definitely.
Engineering in the background, yeah.
So I'm assuming that the suggestion was that you would take up something similar, wasn't it?
That's right. So go do a graduate program at Westlands, and then, or do your apprenticeship, shall I say, sorry, and then carry on through the ranks and work there on helicopters.
But you had other ideas.
I had other ideas, yes, I did indeed.
And why did you want to do your own thing? Was it a bit of rebellion or just weren't interested in engineering?
Well, I think because I was surrounded by it so much, I didn't get interested. I thought, this wasn't for me. Mm. I wanted to try something else, but I didn't know what that something else was.
Okay.
So all I wanted to do was carry on with my education until I found a course which might enlighten me for my my career.
Okay, all right. And the rest of the family, brothers and sisters?
So I've got two sisters and one brother.
Yeah.
They're all older than me, so I'm the youngest.
Yeah.
You know, so I had all the hand-me-downs growing up, which was pleasant. But now I'm the tallest.
And
so,
which direction did life take them? Did they go into engineering at all?
My brother did, yeah. So he went and did the apprenticeship at Westlands. Yeah. And then he stayed there for several years. My two sisters know. My sister Carly is married to a mechanic, Lawrence, class 4 MOTs in Yeovil. Another plug, there we go. And my other sister, Joanne, she's taken on from my mother. So she runs her own child minding company at the moment down in Poole, and hoping to turn that into a nursery fairly soon.
I see. Okay. So you get to the end of school and you did okay with your GCSEs.
Yeah, got a couple of C's. They were my highest grades.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. But you got some anyway.
I did.
And so what was the plan then?
Go to college.
Yeah.
You know, because I didn't want to go and work. I did my work experience in engineering factories. So I thought, well, I want to carry on my education. Let's see what college has got to offer. Yeah.
And was that when you say college, do you mean Yeovil College or elsewhere?
No, no, Yeovil College.
Yeovil College, yeah, okay. And
that was the destination.
Fine. And what did you do there?
Well, I did business studies.
Okay.
So I did business studies. I also did some ad hoc courses. So I did photography as well to see if I could get into it, but I never really did.
No. I see. So business studies, again, was there an end game in mind?
So business studies in itself is quite broad as a subject. It teaches you, finance, marketing, project management, all of these business admin type processes which are needed.
Yeah.
And I most liked the marketing side of it at that point in time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's maybe an appropriate moment to have your second track then, okay, which is by Sam Smith and Money on My Mind. What's the story behind this one?
Well, because I think money's always on everybody's mind, so it's a good song to listen to.
All right. Well, it's good a reason as any, isn't it? So let's have the track. Sam Smith. Here we go.
When I signed my deal, I felt pressure. Don't wanna see the numbers, I wanna see heaven. You say, could you write a song for me? I say, I'm sorry about you that I believe. When I go home, I tend to close the door. I never want to know. So sing with me, can't you see? I don't have
Sam Smith with Money on My Mind from 2014, second single from his debut album, In the Lonely Hour, got to number one in the UK. And that was chosen by my guest in the studio, and that is Ben Weller, who
Hello.
Is the main man behind the Twisted Cider Company.
Yes.
And we'll get onto that in a while and talk a lot more about the company. But we've got to the point where you left college, Ben, and you were then presumably 18 or thereabouts, were you?
Yeah, around that age.
Yeah.
I left college, and again, I still didn't know what to do with my life. So I thought, right, further education is definitely the route for me.
Yep.
So I applied for several universities.
Yep.
Got accepted to one, which was the University of Gloucestershire.
Okay.
But I deferred my application for a year to start off with. And I thought I'd go out and try working. And so I became a postman.
Okay.
It was an experience. Right. I'm not sure if you ever had to get up at 5 a.m. 6 days a week for a year. But yeah,
unless, something I try and avoid.
Yeah, yeah. Well, something I try and avoid now as well. But unfortunately, I've got a young son, so. But we'll come to that later as well, I suppose. Yeah. So I became a postman.
Yeah.
You've never seen a crowd of people so lively at 5 a.m. in the morning. When you come into the sorting office, everyone's listening. Well, the radio's on.
Yep.
You're listening to music.
Abbey 104, I hope.
Yeah, Abbey 104, yeah, of course. Yeah, indeed. And everyone's very cheerful. And that was a really good mood to get your day started.
Yeah.
And then the bonus part about being a postman was you'd finish by midday.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd get home, take my shoes off, put my feet up. I'd watch an episode of Cheers. Cheers came my all-time favourite programme of that era of my life. And then I'd fall asleep. Wake up around 2 and I still got most of the day to go out and enjoy myself.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
And keeps you very fit as well, doesn't it?
It did. Yeah, yeah, it did indeed. So I was a relief postman because I was only there for a year. So I just covered people when they was on holiday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of walking, learning new routes. And that was in Yeovil where I was a postman. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we get to the stage then. You've left college. You've gone into the post office. And how long did that last?
So I was there for... I was a postman for 6 months, so I did that on trial. Then I became a delivery driver for a company called Business Express at the time.
Right.
And I did that for 6 months before I went on to university. And I have to say, a delivery driver was tough.
Yeah.
Being out on the roads all day and stuck in traffic,
right.
I found it pretty hard.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're
it was
on
nice
a,
when the weather was this good.
You're on a pretty tight schedule when you're doing that.
Always on a tight schedule, yeah, because you get paid per parcel.
Yeah, okay. So the post office and the delivery driver, and that all lasted a year and a bit.
That's it, yeah. Just a year.
Just a year.
I deferred it for a year.
Yeah.
And then I went to university in September.
So you'd applied to go to university.
That's right.
And they obviously accepted you. And you say Gloucester.
Yes, University of Gloucestershire.
Yeah, okay. And the course was to be?
International Marketing and Marketing Management.
Oh,
now, that is a mouthful, isn't it?
No, yeah.
I can't really describe to you what that was. But it was the route of marketing which I enjoyed when I was at college. So I thought I'd give it, make it more of a defined course at university.
Yeah. You enjoyed marketing from previous stuff.
Yeah.
So again, is there an end game in mind here, or is it still let's do what I'm interested in?
I think the end game is creating a product which, people want. And that is marketing to me.
Mm.
At university, you kind of learn the fundamentals about it, like people's buying behaviours and the patterns that they go through and how their brain works.
Yep.
And it's getting an understanding of that and then putting it into practice, which is what I'm trying to do now.
Right, okay. Yeah. So that was ultimately going to be helpful to you when you did get around to setting up the business.
Yep.
All right, so you were 3 years at uni?
Oh, no, I was 4 years.
4 years, okay.
At university, because I did a placement year.
Right.
So I did a year working for an internet marketing company called 6GL, based down in Yeovil. And one of the roles I had to do there was bring on new clients, and they had a website called The Pubbing Guide,
right.
Which might also feed into what I'm doing today somehow.
Yeah,
I don't know. And I would go out and visit pubs, promote this website to them, kind of get a membership fee and ask them to sign up and promote their business on there.
Okay. Yeah. So what was uni like? I mean, for a lot of young people, that's a tremendous experience, isn't it? Moving away from home and you kind of find yourself and you grow up quite quickly, I suppose.
That's true. You have to, you have to learn to stand on your own 2 feet quite quickly because you're away from home. And it's the first time being away from home for a long period of time.
Sure.
And you have to kind of support yourself. I was fortunate enough to go to university at a time where the fees weren't so expensive and the governments would still cover your costs. So, I'm very humble for that. The experience itself was fantastic. I've met a good bunch of friends who I'm still in contact with a couple today. The social part of university is something which I haven't really experienced since leaving, let's say. There are some very, very good and memorable parties.
A little bit of cider may have been consumed.
Oh, amongst other... Amongst other alcoholic products, there was. They're good at drinking alcohol at university, is what I found.
I've heard that.
But they're also good at studying, So we had a very good support group at university that provided you with the study and help you needed if you required it.
Mm-hmm.
And the library was open, I think, almost 24 hours a day, so you could go in and do a lot of revision and preparation before your exams.
Yeah.
And the Student Union Bar was open.
The Student Union Bar was open as well. And it was also, yeah, obviously you didn't have 24-hour drinking back then, so it was, you know, between the licensed hours. But it was open at 7 a.m, so you could go in, sit down, have a coffee, and do a bit of studying in the Student Union Bar as
okay,
well.
Okay, so it sounds like it was a really enjoyable time.
Oh, it was a very enjoyable time. Yeah. And I met a gentleman there called Ryan, Ryan Doland, and he works for a internet marketing company called Zigzag. And they're the people who do all of my artwork.
Oh, okay.
On my website. So that's a friendship which has blossomed.
I should
a
say you've brought in a couple of samples there, which are what would you call them? They look like the
fonts,
plates that appear on
right.
The front of handles in pubs.
So they're the pump handles.
Yes.
Not the handles, but the pump clips.
The clips. Yeah.
So they're the fonts that go on the clips that fit onto the pump handles.
Yeah. I see.
So I've brought the four in.
And he's done the artwork for those.
That's right. He's done the artwork, and they created the website as well.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. I've had a look at the website. Yeah, it's very good. Slick, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, very good. Okay, so that took you through then, 4 years. So you were early 20s, 22 or thereabouts.
Tough 4 years, yeah. Early 20s.
But the time comes when you've got to...
Get a job,
yeah.
Got to work. Mm. You have to go out and earn a living. So...
Must have been tough.
It was tough. And I still wanted to prolong my experience, let's say, before I went and did a career. So they have job fairs at universities. They go and encourage students to find their career. And there was a company there called Smoke Tree Ranch.
Okay.
And this is a ranch based out in America. And they basically provide an experience for students where they go out there for the winter months, so 6 months, and they are servants. They sell it better than that, but you are a servant for 6 months. So Smoke Tree Ranch is a colony. So colonists live on there.
Right.
And they go there during the winter months because during the summer it's too hot. So it's in Palm Springs, California.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so quite a nice place.
Very nice place. Yeah. And I believe people like Frank Sinatra were quite frequent there.
Yeah.
So you go over there, and I worked there for 6 months as a servant. Normally in the kitchen, being a waiter, let's say, so you're doing your breakfast, lunch, and dinners. Yep. But you would have the occasions where you'd go up into the canyons and you'd do like a breakfast up in the canyons.
Oh, I see.
And that was brilliant because you could take a horseback ride up there, you know, and then you'd go up there and do the setup of the table. And you'd have Banjo Bob, who'd be up there playing his banjo for the colonists while they're having their breakfast.
Oh, great.
It was a wonderful experience.
You say a colony.
Yes.
A colony of who doing what?
Well, that's it. A colony of who? From my understanding, it was a colony of wealthy Americans, and this was their holiday homes. So this is where they went on holiday for six months of the year.
Yeah.
You know, when the ranch was open.
Yeah, they call them the snowbirds or something, don't they? So they're typically people that live in the north and find their way down south when it's winter.
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
And then again from Smoke Tree Ranch, also made a good set of friends.
Yeah.
And a couple of them were from university because we all came from the same university and went and worked there. For 7 months, at the end of the 6 months of working, I did a month tour. So we drove from LA to New York, going across, I think it's about 4,000 miles.
Yeah, tremendous.
You know, traveling around America.
Fantastic experience.
It was absolutely brilliant.
I mean, it sounds wonderful from the point of view of an experience. But what was in it for you when you went over there? Was it just let's take 6 months out and do something different and think about life, or
that's
was there again something in mind?
Not nothing in mind. Not to think about life. It was just to take 6 months out and get an experience. I think all experiences kind of make you who you are as a person, and that experience taught me how to be very customer focused, because you had to be very tentative to the colonists, and you know, service in America is of a high standard, and we had to perform to that high standard, and that's kind of developed now through to me and how I treat my customers.
Okay, so it's tremendous designer. Backing in, or founding, should we say, in service principles and the way to run a business and prioritize the customer service. Yeah.
Exactly that.
Okay, well, that sounds like a fantastic experience, but again, that had to come to an end at some point.
Yes.
And you came back to the UK?
I did. I come back to the UK.
From Palm Springs back to Yeovil?
Indeed, yeah. Palm Springs back to Yeovil was a big change, you know, after being out of the country for 7 months.
Yeah.
I was happy to come home, and there's nothing like coming into the UK and just seeing all the greenery. You know, that's what I miss so
Palm
much.
Palm Springs isn't green, is it?
Palm Springs is a desert. No. there's not much green, apart from like the fake grass. There's not a lot of greenery there, no. A lot of sun. but not green.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just remember as I was coming into Heathrow, coming down on the plane, just seeing all the green fields.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just thought, oh, I'm home now.
Yes.
So, you know, it's time to start making my life happen.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, that seems like a really appropriate moment to pause and to have your next track.
Wonderful.
Which is We Built This City by Starship.
Yeah. So We Built This City, which is what I'm doing with Twisted Cider.
Yeah.
I'm building a nice company.
Yeah. Starship and We Built This City from 1985, and that was written amongst others by Bernie Taupin, and topped the list of the worst song. Well, I rather like it actually, and
it's one of my favourites.
Yeah, and it's it was used in an advert recently. We were just discussing it. We think it was for 3 Mobile.
That's right.
With a little girl on a pink tricycle.
Yes,
and rather good advert it was too. Anyway, in the studio I've got Ben Weller, who's the manager, owner, everything to do with the Twisted Cider Company. But we haven't quite got to the company's formation yet. We're talking about your earlier life, Ben.
Indeed.
And we left you returning from America.
That's right.
Coming back from sunny Palm Springs to not quite so sunny Yeovil.
Yes, indeed.
And but you were pleased to get back.
I was.
But then, of course, it was a case of you needed to do something.
Yes.
To earn some money. And what did you end up doing?
Well, I ended up in Yeovil. Instantly thought to myself, I don't want to stay at home. And my brother was living up in Bristol, working in... So he left Westerns and went to university in Bristol. And then he went into the hotel industry. So he was working for Hilton, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
And he had a flat with a spare room. And I asked him if I could move up there, which he was more than happy for me to do so. So I packed my bags and went up to Bristol to find a job. And I landed a really good job working for the Bristol Balloon Fiesta.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you heard of it, but no, it's a very big event.
Yes.
You know? And
yeah.
And that in itself was a wonderful experience, especially, you know, come the actual time of the event and seeing all the balloons take off and having the night shows and stuff.
That's sort of August, September time, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Mm. August, September time. And that's what I did for several years. And from that, I've taken away how to run events, because at Twisted Cider, I have an open day each year. We've got one this year on the 15th of July.
Yep.
So it'll be open from 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. So hopefully... all those listeners, come on down. I'd love to see you there.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. And the weather will be fantastic, of course. You know, can't bank on it, but I'm sure it will be.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I stayed in Bristol for a couple of years until I had enough and started applying for jobs down in London. So I wanted something bigger and better.
So working for the Balloon Fiesta, interesting what you say there, because I would have assumed that that was... quite it wasn't a year-long thing, but obviously it is, it's a full-time position.
Yes, so you're quite right, it wasn't a year-long thing, it was over a period, I think, for like 6 months. So I would just go and do temp work when I was out of that I was out of that role doing office admin jobs to keep a wage coming in.
But and again, a really interesting thing to do.
Very interesting, yeah.
You learn a lot about balloons.
You do, well, yeah, not so much. Yeah, I learned a lot about exhibitors because I was in charge of booking the exhibitors in, and that was my role.
Okay, so after that, the big city then...
The big city.
...beckoned.
It did indeed.
And what was that? Was that just because you wanted to go and work and live in London, or was there something specific?
Again, just for the experience. Mm, it's something that I believe... If the opportunity arises, you should take, because it is the biggest city in the UK and it is vastly different from any other experience I've had in other cities or towns where I've lived.
Okay. So you decided you want to go and work there, but how did you go about finding something to do? It's one thing just wanting to be there.
So I went down the temp route. So I started just applying for jobs through agencies, hundreds of them, I'd imagine. Until one day, one of the temp agencies come back to me and said they've got me a job working for the civil service on a recruitment campaign. It's called the Fast Stream.
Mm-hmm.
It's the government's stage graduate program, and to get people to become senior civil servants.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked on the operational teams for that. Yeah, so okay. I got the job offer. I think it was January the 6th. Told my dad I'm going down there and starting the next day. So packed my bags that night. Drove down to my friend Richard Hake's house, who lived in St Albans at the time, and started work pretty much the next day. Got the training and went to work.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And this was right in London, in Westminster, Whitehall?
That's right, in Westminster. So Parliament Street, the HMRC building there, 100 Parliament Street.
I see.
And that in itself, you know, I was there for 4 years, and every day going in Westminster and just looking at the architecture and the buildings, bought something special. It was a really nice...
This was, well, roughly speaking, 10 years ago now, was it?
Right, so I moved down there in January 2010.
Yeah.
And then I stayed there I stayed there for 4 years. Yeah, so I come back in 2014.
So going into the rarefied world of the civil service in Whitehall or Westminster must again have been quite an interesting experience.
Yeah, it is an interesting experience. And one I'm still... living, because I'm a civil servant now. So I carried on the occupation of being a civil servant. So from a temp, I became an actual civil servant, which I still am today. But now I work from Bristol.
Okay. So how did that progress then? So you went and started work there. Doing what sort of stuff?
So down in London.
Yeah.
So I worked on... So we run assessment centres.
Okay.
So graduates would come in, or applications for graduates would come in. And we just give them a series of tests right there in the assessment centre.
These were people wanting to join the civil service?
That's correct,
So you were within the HR area of it?
Yeah. So Human resources. Yes. Yeah. Civil service resourcing is what they call it.
Okay. Yeah. So you were involved in the recruitment of new people into the civil service.
Exactly.
And so where did that take you then? Did you carry on doing that or did that develop into other things?
No. So I carried on doing that for 4 years, same role for 4 years. And then I thought to myself, it was time to move on. It was down in London where I started Twisted Cider. Because it was when I went to the bars and all you had was commercial bland cider. And yep. I thought to myself, you know, we need to do something more than this.
Yes, yeah.
And this is where my friend Jackson at the time, who I went to university with and was also living down in London, we decided to start Twisted Cider. Yeah. So it was okay. Born from boring cider out of the big city. And first of all, we didn't make our own cider. We just went to other producers around the UK who did interest in ciders, bought the stocks in, and then went to farmers markets. So every Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, we go to different farmers markets around London City and sell cider from our stall.
All right. So that's where the idea started getting hatched, if
exactly.
you like.
Exactly, yeah.
So you started that as a sort of part-time, quite a small-scale thing.
Very small,
while
yes.
you were living up there.
Yeah, just to earn a bit of pocket money on the side, because London's an expensive city to live in.
Yeah, too right, yes. And, but you stayed up there for roughly 4 years.
Yep.
And then you moved back to Bristol.
Exactly. So during that four-year period, we made the transition from selling other people's cider to making our own.
Mm-hmm.
So the demand on me coming back to Long Burton was growing. So I was down there pretty much every weekend. And to make that trek from London was exhausting.
Sure.
So I thought, okay, I still needed a full-time job because Twisted Cider's, you know, a hobby. It brings in money, but not enough to live on.
Yep.
The idea was to move closer to home, stay a civil servant because it's an easy transition.
Yep.
And that way I'd be able to commute easier to Long Burton. And that's why I ended up going to Bristol.
Oh, all right, fine. So you're still working for the civil service in Bristol?
Yes.
Still doing recruitment type stuff?
No,
moved on.
Yeah, completely different. Yep. So I moved from HMRC, which was the host of civil service resourcing, to the Ministry of Defence.
Oh, okay. So that's sort of bringing us a bit more up to date then. So you'd already got this idea of the cider company and it was going in a very small way up in London.
Yes.
But you then started to develop that when you moved back west.
That's right, yeah. So the idea was just to focus on our own cider, make our own brands and sell that. And that's where me and my friend Jackson parted because he wanted to stay in London. He had a career down there as well because this was like a hobby for him. And I wanted to focus more on our own brands.
Yes.
What I did was create just a farmhouse cider. We had one product at the time and it was only called Twisted Cider Misty. So our flagship product, which is a nice medium cider, and started just distributing it to wholesalers around the UK. Because having a full-time job, I didn't have the time to go out and visit pubs independently. So I'd approach wholesalers, you know, and then they'd kind of do the legwork.
So you obviously maintained the job and you then started to develop the business, really.
Yeah.
Were you doing this because you've got premises at home or your premises in Long Burton, haven't you?
Yes.
So at what point did they come in?
So they've always been based at Long Burton. So that's where my parents live in Long Burton. They've got the little orchard and they were the ones, you know, they kind of made their own cider just a couple of hundred litres a year.
Yeah.
And that was part of the formation of it. I thought, I can expand this. I've got the resources available to start making something here.
Right. So that's really where the idea came from, was that there was already a family background
in making something. Yeah. Okay. They were brand new to it as well, because we only moved to Long Burton in 2006, I believe, around that mark. So, you know, the orchard was planted when they moved in.
Yeah.
And they're still young trees, only 14 years old.
Right.
And the tree doesn't come... the half standards, so they don't come fully mature until they're about 20 years old.
Oh, okay. Fine. All right, we're getting sort of reasonably well up to date with the company now. So shall we just break and take your next track and then we'll talk about exactly what the business is. And the next one is Feel the Love. So what's caused you to choose this one?
Well, Glastonbury. I went to Glastonbury and Rudimental were playing. And this is just a brilliant track, you know, to relax and dance to and have a good time.
I can feel it all.
So that's Rudimental featuring John Newman and Feel the Love from 2012, the second single from their debut album called Home. And with me today in the studio is Ben Weller. And we're coming up to date now, Ben, aren't we? We're talking about...
Getting there.
Yeah, we're talking about how Twisted Cider came about.
I think we're in 2014, so you're only a few years away.
Not too far behind, no. And so there was a little bit of a history of... Well, the family had got into cider making at the same time, really, that you started taking it up in London.
Yes.
And then you moved back to Bristol, and then you started developing the business to a greater extent then.
Yes.
So how did that all come about? Did you just start sort of ramping up the production?
That's right. Yeah. I'd say it's very hard for me, being such a small producer, to kind of predict what sales I'm going to make in future years.
Yeah.
Let's say. So what I've done is just doubled production each year because I've never carried stock over. So I have an 18th month kind of period. So if I harvest times in October, November, I want it all gone by April the following year.
Yep.
So. Not the following year, but the year after the following year. So 18 months. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Good.
Tell us the nitty-gritty here. You've got an orchard.
Got an orchard.
Okay, and that's big enough to provide everything you need?
No. Not big enough to provide everything I need, but very tough to manage.
And you were saying that the trees take a while to mature anyway.
That's right, yeah. So they're about 14 years old. So they're coming, they're starting to crop good at the moment. Crop even better in another 6 years.
Right.
But managing an orchard is a different story.
Oh, okay.
So we've got roughly about 100 trees in our orchard. We've got over 10 different cider varieties. Now, I'm not very good at remembering what those varieties are, so please don't ask. Pruning them and looking after them is tough work. So that takes up a lot of my time during the first few months of the winter, say after Christmas finish. So harvest comes in. Your apples are here. You've got to press them.
Yeah.
That's a tough job. Especially when we first started out, it was all done by hand. So we used to get a little car jack, a couple of blocks of wood.
Yeah, yeah.
And we bought a piece of garden equipment which had a blade in there to chop the apples up. And we put all the pulp into something that's called a cheese, which is a bit of cloth. And you wrap all of the pulp into a cheese, stack them several high, get two planks of wood, one at the bottom, one at the top, and then just apply pressure. And then the pressure will obviously squeeze the pulp, which is the crushed up apples, and then the juice will come out, and then you just have a device to collect the juice.
All right. So you put enough pressure on them, you get as much juice as you possibly can out of them, and you collect that juice together. And what happens next?
Well, this is the interesting part, especially if you're a chemist or a scientist of some sort, which I'm not. But I put it in a vat. So normally when we first started, it would have been like a 225 liter oak barrel, and leave the cider in there. Put an airlock on there. And then you just let it ferment. So our cider ferments naturally. There's no cultured yeast added to it. So we use the wild yeast and the wild sugars from the apples to ferment our cider, which I believe gives a better taste.
Okay.
And it's more of a natural process to take.
Yeah.
And then so you just let the cider ferment out, which generally does from November to January, let's say, is a rough period.
Okay.
And then you should have your base cider, a dry cider. So it's the sugar from the apples which makes the alcohol. When it reacts with the yeast.
Sure.
So you can do some simple tests. One's called a specific gravity test. So you take your juice, you just drop, it's like a thermometer, drop it in there, and it will raise to a certain level, and that will tell you how much sugar is in your juice. And then from there, you can work out the alcohol percentage. And then the second test I do is a pH, because I want to kind of know how much acid is in there. So I take a pH test, and if it's between 3.2 and 3.8, you've got a good pH reading and your cider's going to stay healthy through the fermentation stage.
In very broad terms, and you crush the apples. This is just after the harvest.
Yes.
You get the juice, you put in the yeast, you leave it to...
I don't put in no yeast.
Oh, sorry.
All wild yeast.
All, no, okay. Yeah, yeah. Right. So natural. All right. And then you leave that then for about 3 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you do all your tests along the way, check it's all
healthy.
As it should be.
Yep.
And you end up with, not completed cider, or do you?
Is it? No, so a dry cider.
Yeah.
So obviously all the sweetness from the apple is fermented into alcohol. So you get, I call it a base cider.
Yeah.
And that is just cider in its purest form. If you've ever tried a dry cider, it really makes your mouth kind of pucker, you can feel it in your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you get.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's ready for the new year. Let's say at the same time I start doing my pruning in the trees. What I like to do then is rack it off from the dead leaves and then put it into a fresh vat and leave it in there to mature. Yeah. And it will stay in there anywhere between 6 to 18 months.
Okay.
So 6 months is the minimum time I let my cider mature for before I start selling it, because it will carry on building character once it's in the vat, you know, like a wine, very much so. Right. So you want it to build character, because that's where your flavour comes from.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so anywhere between, after 6 months, I've then got a product which I'm ready to start selling.
And the different varieties, I mean, you've basically got there, well, in essence, you've got Wild Orchard, Sunset, Misty and Desert Dry.
Oh, aren't they fabulous names?
Yes, well, wonderful, yes. so what makes the different ones? Is it different types of apples or is it different process?
No, different process. Mm. So they all come from the same base cider, and then I just sweeten the cider. So I got the Wild Orchard, which is a sweet, the Misty is a medium, the Sunset is a medium dry, and the Desert Dry is just a dry cider.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I sweeten the cider just by using cane sugar. So I would heat cane sugar into a cider solution, and then I add that into the cider itself to sweeten it.
I should have said right at the beginning here, do you have to go on any sort of training to do this, or do you just sort of learn as you go along?
Yeah, learn as you go along.
Yeah.
So I start, the only training like that, there are companies that offer courses these days, because it's so popular now. You can go and do courses, but my training came from books and the internet. Right. So I just went and bought a couple of cider books and read them, and then anything where, when I come into problems, I'd refer to the internet. But now I've got a good knowledge, which is mostly built from other cider producers.
Yeah.
What I've found from the cider making community is everyone's willing to help each other.
Oh, okay.
So if I've got a problem, I'll generally go and ask a gentleman called Bob Chaplin. And he's a fellow cider producer. I don't know if I should tell his cider company name, you know, because we're not here to plug his cider. We're here to plug mine.
Right.
But he gives me the knowledge I need.
So, I mean, I'm conscious the clock is ticking here. So the business as it now stands then.
Yes.
roughly how much are you producing? Who are you selling it to?
So we did 20,000 litres last harvest, which is the biggest amount we've done to date.
Yeah.
I sell the majority of my product through wholesalers, which come from the Midlands and up in Yorkshire.
Yeah.
And then I've got a guy down in Christchurch as well. There's a bit of Bournemouth around that area.
Yeah.
And now I'm closer to home, I've started making that jump in visiting pubs independently. So there are a couple of stockists. Okay. So you've got the Long Burton, the Rose and Crown. So they will have my cider on a rotational basis. You've got the White Hart and Yetminster. So they also have it on a rotational basis. And then I've got the Digby Tap in Sherborne, who were the people behind me creating our brand new sparkling cider.
Okay.
So they serve our new keg cider. And I tell you, you haven't tasted a better pint. So if you like cider and you think Thatcher's is a nice pint of cider, try Twisted Cider next time you're in a Digby Tap, because it's got so much more character. It really is beautiful. And then Vida Comida up in town as well.
Yes, the Spanish.
Tapas, that's the Spanish tapas place. Yeah. They also serve our new sparkling cider.
Okay, and the business is going well, is it?
Yeah, business is going good.
Yeah. What's the aspiration? So are you looking to expand further?
Always looking to expand. But I've got to create a balance, because I've got a full-time job, I've got a family, and also I've got this cider company. So after chatting to my wife, we come up with the idea of, I'm going to see if I can take 12 months leave from work unpaid from next April, and I'm going to go full time. So we're going to open up a shop in Long Burton where we produce the cider. That's going to be our main focus. So I want to get customers coming in, people from the surrounding area, let's say. I want them to know that I'm there and they can come and have local cider.
Right.
I've also just built a mobile bar. When I say I built it, my dad built it.
Right.
And it's fabulous, you know. So we're going to go out and start attending events as well with our mobile bar.
This is a van of some sort, isn't it?
It's a horse box.
Oh, okay.
Converted horse box. So we stripped it down to the chassis and then just built a bar.
Yeah.
And it looks wonderful. Yeah, so that's our other area of focus. And then I've got the website as well. So I'm not an IT expert, and I've had this website since we started, and I really don't know what to do with it. So I need to pay some attention to the website and, you know, improve it and create sales from there.
Yeah.
So that's my plan for next year.
And we're coming towards the end of our discussion, Ben. I'm afraid the clock is really running ahead.
I could carry on for ages.
Yeah, absolutely. But it sounds like a really good business you've got running.
It is an exciting business.
Very happy with it at
the
moment.
Very happy,
and plenty of potential.
Plenty of potential, So please always keep your eye out for the Twisted Cider brand.
If you go
into any outlets, and this is for your listeners as well, you know, if you've had a chance to sample our products and you really like them, and you go to your local and it's not on tap, send them my details.
Yeah.
Say, why have you not got Twisted Cider behind the bar? It's a beautiful product. get them to give me a call.
It's just called brazen marketing, really.
Indeed.
Why not? Anyway, okay, thank you for that. But just a sort of end bit then on you.
Yes.
I'm imagining you don't get a whole stack of free time.
No.
With two jobs and a family.
Yeah, so I've got two young children. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, I like to try and dedicate whatever spare time I can to them, as long as it's with my wife as well.
Yep.
And then when I do get a spare hour, I'll pop down to the Oxley Sports Centre here in Sherborne and give my friend Lee Goddard, if you remember him from the beginning of the interview, a good thrashing at squash, because let's say he's not that great.
I'm sure he'll be pleased to hear you saying that. So that mainly is your recreation, then, is the squash?
It is, yeah.
Okay, so, and plenty of time with the family where you can get it.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. When time allows.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, look, it's been great talking to you.
You too, Terry.
And we wish the business every success. You know, it sounds like it's a really promising thing for the future.
Yeah.
And I hope it keeps on growing, and I hope you keep doing well out of it.
Well, I hope to see you on the 15th of July at our open
day.
Let's not forget that date.
Absolutely. Yeah. We will do that. Ben, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay.
She swore that she loved me.